You're listening to Speak Free with Simon O'Connor, right here on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
Well, joining us now is Nick Han. He is the Education Partnership Manager for the Free Speech Union. And anyone who knows me knows I'm a great proponent of free speech. I love the work which the Free Speech Union does, and it's just fantastic to have Nick along today. Amongst many things, he's actually running something called Speak Up. So the first thing I need to let you know, Nick, is that we've called this show Speak Free. It's probably partly plagiarised. Whether it was inspired by you, we can debate that off camera, or off audio, strictly speaking. Hey, but Nick, welcome along.
Thank you, Simon. It's a pleasure to be with you.
So you're working in the education space, and particularly with young people, a relatively new initiative within the Free Speech Union. As someone who's a leader in this space, what are you seeing in general with our young people when it comes to free speech? Do they see it as something fantastic, or are they wary, or they just don't really understand?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a new initiative on our part. But personally, I mean, I've worked as a high school teacher for the past 7 years, and before that I worked with at-risk youth. So just sort of anecdotally or personally, I can basically attest to the fact that a lot of young people really just aren't getting the basics. They're not even being introduced to the idea or the concept of free speech really in any kind of formal way in their education. Now, that's not true necessarily of some private schools, but certainly in the public sector, it really depends on whether you have a teacher, you know, a classroom teacher that happens to use that approach where they encourage free speech. So, coming into this role and into this work, I guess I see it as a major opportunity to kind of reset. And so as an organization, we've been trying to react to a lot of situations, you know, trying to help people put out some fires where perhaps professionally or in some sort of public space they're being, silenced or censored. And we've realized that really the critical next stage is actually reaching the next generation. We are going to see, you know, international trends, they're being reflected here. We're going to see a real silencing, a real sort of chilling of free speech culture. And that's a real concern, a real concern.
Oh, I'd completely echo that as someone who, look, the Free Speech Union, you guys have experienced the cancelling dynamics, or at least the attempts I certainly have over time, and we all know many, many cases across the country where people are being deplatformed. Right across, I might add, the political spectrum. I see the other day in Wellington, Dr. Mike Joy, you know, a water scientist. Some would see him as controversial. Personally, I think he's just got a perspective. But was it the Wellington Library did or tried to cancel him? So this is widespread. But have you found then, Nick, and obviously with your experience in teaching and now in this lead role, is that the young people are just not thinking about free speech, or are they, again, it's generalization, are they celebrating the cancel culture? Have they been inculcated through teachers, media and others to celebrate the cancel culture? I mean, what are you seeing there?
I think there's a combination of things, and of course you can't say that one student has the same view as the next, but I would say that the general kind of atmosphere in education and amongst young people is that the Overton window, you know, that sort of range of accepted opinions or views that you could express in society, that really has narrowed, or at least it's shifted perhaps. And again, we're not, you know, politically aligned in the sense that we're not taking a substantive view on most political issues unless they affect things like free speech and civil liberties. But, you know, the real concern is that there just isn't the scope anymore to talk about things that even 10, 15 years ago, you could have easily talked about in classrooms or in a public space. And so I think a lot of young people just don't know how far they can go in terms of the range of topics they can talk about. And there's other aspects. I mean, there's a huge, you know, emphasis now or push towards being empathic, you know, thinking of how does it feel to be in someone else's shoes, which of course is a very important, I think essential quality that we should be instilling in young people. But that's coming at the expense of rational thought. It's coming at the expense of evidence-based argument. And of course, you know, it doesn't have to be that just because we're all about free speech, we have to be uncivil. You know, it's about trying to convince young people this is not a screaming match. You know, this is actually something where we could be really respectful, while not necessarily seeing eye to eye about a particular topic. But, you know, knowing in the end we're human beings, we've got to show that respect towards each other, recognize the inherent dignity that other people have, and hope they show it back.
Well, that's sort of the sad observation on my part, and again, obviously no expert, but I see a lot of young people are being, if you will, taught or encouraged towards the activist model, quite aggressive activism, actually. So go out, yell, protest, scream, yell, intimidate. I mean, these are all, again, general statements, but that's what I see a lot of people sort of being encouraged to instead of actually good, rational debate. And the second thing for me, certainly, I mean, empathy is absolutely important. You know, believe it or not, spent most of my life trying to empathize and help people, but I would always make the argument, perhaps it's the philosopher in me, Nick, that you have to know who to empathize with, when and why. In other words, there needs to be some, if you will, rational thought or consideration before that of how much empathy to display or not. It's not just something that should just be automatically thrown around. Otherwise, it becomes, in my view, meaningless. But I also wonder, what is it that takes away that then natural questioning for young people? And the context for me is this. I've got 5 stepkids. They're all amazing. They're older now. But, you know, when they're really young, they ask all sorts of questions. You know, as a step-parent, they ask a question around the restaurant table where you go, oh, my God, it's not that it was bad, but it's just an innocent young question, but our sensibilities kick in. But how and why is that natural questioning, it seems, being taken away from young ones that now they won't touch, particularly at high school level, they just won't touch a lot of issues. It doesn't matter if it's around COVID to gender identity, the treaty, they just won't touch it. How's that been drawn out of them? What's stopped them? Sorry, very long question.
No. I'm absolutely, you know, relevant to this whole thing. I suppose I would see it as being a natural impulse to question, you know, every 3-year-old, 4-year-old, I've got, you know, younger kids, they will ask you why, and, you know, how does that work? You know, what's this about? And so that's a natural impulse. What often happens, unfortunately, in modern education is that natural impulse is not necessarily completely stamped out, but people steer it, like I said before, into a particular, you know, range of topics to discuss, and they avoid those things that are considered taboo at the time in the culture. The other thing, I guess, is that as people get older, there is that also natural impulse to try and ensure that there's some kind of social cohesion. You know, they don't want to get offside with their neighbours, with their work colleagues, and so on. And I think as a result of that, it's very easy to lean into that impulse and start to, you know, kind of stifle or at least narrow the curiosity that we're born with. And so, you know, you're dealing with those two kind of impulses at different stages in life. And the key thing for me is free speech is always something that has to be actively promoted. It has to be something that you remind yourself of and other people of, and hopefully they do that for you, because it really takes work. You know, it's so much easier just to go, no, I won't say anything. I'm going to mind my own business, stay in the corner, and, you know, and hope it all goes okay. That, unfortunately, just doesn't work in a democracy. So we're going to have young people who really do think that they have to defer to the so-called experts in the room every time there's an issue that they're just not familiar with. And even those they are familiar with, they'll say, well, I don't know that my own personal experience counts here, so I'm not going to bring it into the conversation.
You highlight for me actually a really important dynamic, as I understand it, so correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, at one level we're talking about young people and what's happening to them and how they're acting, but actually there's also the older generation, I'll put myself in there, not so much your good self, but it's also a responsibility on us as older ones to make sure we are allowing that to happen. Because you're right, I think there's a natural tendency, including in myself, that you go, okay, I've got these views and I'm pretty sure they're right and we want to impart those. But there can be that human tendency to impart things too strongly or to narrow cast out other views. So, yeah, it's one thing to talk about young people as we're doing, but at the same time, there's a responsibility on the older generations to allow the young ones to explore wonderful ideas. And as I've also found sometimes what I think are absolutely crazy, but, you know, all power to them. So in terms then of what you're leading, you are running a program, is it called Speak Up? Tell us about program in schools, and are you getting into many schools? Are they opening the doors to you?
Yeah, well, we've just started the program, so this academic year, and we've called it Speak Up for the obvious reason that we want people actually to use their voices, you know, use their brains, use their voices. We're really about encouraging students to see this as a constructive model of free speech. You know, free speech in its essence is something that helps advance ideas, arguments, you know, discourse, and it gets people further along that sort of path towards greater knowledge and ultimately sort of some pursuit of truth. And so we've called it Speak Up. We're going into high schools. We've been to a few already. But really the thing is we can cast the net wide, you know, but there are a lot of people who are nervous in the education sector. I wouldn't say that necessarily the opposition is so great that no one's letting us in, but people are nervous. And we're really just trying to reach out and say, particularly just to, you know, subject teachers, you know, this doesn't have to be a school assembly thing. Could just be that you have a class and maybe you're a history teacher and you are interested in civil rights and how that has progressed over the last, you know, 100, 200 years. So that's where we can actually tailor some of what we do. We come in and we'll talk about, well, you know, why did Martin Luther King, you know, achieve what he did? Why did people like John Lewis, who worked with King, continue to emphasize free speech as a, you know, as probably the most important tool in the civil rights campaigners, you know, toolbox? It's a method, you know, that's what we're really trying to get across to people. So we could talk to history classes, but we could also talk to science classes. You know, the free speech touches pretty much every domain in education. And again, we're not about a substantive position on a political topic or an ideological topic. We're really emphasizing this is a method. This is how we can advance discourse, debate, and ultimately knowledge and truth.
Which I think is great. Look, it's one of the strengths, says me, as a layman compared to you, or rather someone who doesn't work with the Free Speech Union. One of the things I admire what you and the team do is you are, if you will, politically agnostic. You're not left, you're not right. In fact, I mean, you know, if anyone has taken the time to look at who sits both in the team and also on your council, the directors, it's a broad spectrum of people. And, you know, I've admired and often noted the flack you guys get in social media from both sides, which tells me you're doing the right thing. So you'll be saying, hey, look, this group here has the right to hold whatever it wants to do, and the opposite view also. So really, really valuable. I mean, are you finding, obviously it's a new program, so early days, but are at least some schools opening up, or are you facing also some pretty fierce knockbacks?
Well, I wouldn't say fierce. I mean, it's easy for schools to just go silent. And that's, you know, that's the problem, really, we're seeing across the board, whether it's in schools or, you know, out there in society generally. It is just the, you know, the easy kind of default position to take. I'm not going to open my mouth. I'm not going to risk, you know, having a person come in and run a session in my classroom that might upset a parent or two or a student or two, despite the fact that the overwhelming, you know, good that's derived from these sorts of exercises is really indisputable, I think. It's setting young people up ideally with not just the skills but a deeper, you know, democratic ethos or philosophy that's going to help keep our democracy going. You know, that's sort of a long-winded way of saying we really need people to be a bit braver and have these conversations. And I don't think that, I mean, I wouldn't say that, look, every teacher out there is terrified and no one wants to talk about this. A lot of teachers are just busy. They're trying to get through the curriculum expectations that they have and meet their goals. But, you know, this conversation isn't actively being promoted across our education sector. And I worked in a private school, you know, for 7 years, and we were doing stuff in terms of epistemology, so that, you know, sort of the study of how we know and why we think we know certain things and whether we do or not. And I ran a particular course for senior students, preparing them for some of the top universities in the world. And we had kids go off to Harvard and Oxford and Cambridge as a result of this. And what we found, you know, using that particular program is it really does totally transform their view of knowledge and whatever the subject, the discipline they're going into. And it makes it in many cases, come alive for them. It isn't just some kind of, musty old, accepted, received opinion, but it's something that could be challenged, if there's an opportunity to. And free speech, speaking up is how you do that, whether it's academically or in public space or in media or whatever.
Well, it's one of the paradoxes to me in modern society, which I'll make a slightly political point here, and so I'm not trying to drag you into it, but sort of the progressive side of things says we've got to be individuals and we've got to be celebrated as we are, and we must be affirmed for being individuals, which in some ways is a good thing. But then when it comes to freely speaking your ideas, no, not that. Not that part of your identity. And it's like, but that's one of the most core elements, to be able to explore, blunder, and everything else in between around ideas. The other thing I might note is I was not expecting the word epistemology to appear today. I think that's the word for the show, epistemology. We can all look that up. Next week, eschatology. No, love it. But I just think it's just so vitally important, as you say, for the development of young minds. And my wife's a teacher. She would agree with you. She would fully agree with you, just the huge workload. But I think the sad thing I found, granted, when I was an MP and visiting schools, is, again, in very general terms, not a lot of discussion in this space in public. But what really concerned me was how often teachers, sometimes principals, in the school corridors, or if I met them in the street the next day, would more discreetly tell me their concerns and worries, particularly around free speech, the ability to discuss ideas. And it's always saddened me more than anything that, even in that environment, that the leaders, the teachers, have a view but don't always feel themselves free to speak. So you guys clearly have a big challenge ahead of you, and I'm excited by this Speak Up project. So we'll have to have you back on to tell us how it's going.
Thanks.
But one last question. I'm a former politician. When I say one, it could be two. Who knows? Who trusts me? But no, seriously, you've recently had Jonathan Rauch out. Do you want to quickly tell listeners who he was and what he was doing here? Granted, he's gone now, but formidable speaker.
Yeah. Jonathan Rauch is a really, prominent journalist from the US. He's written and spoken extensively on academic freedom, but also on civil rights and the really, really crucial role that free speech plays in civil rights campaigns. Now, I mean, some people may agree with his politics, some people may not, but I wouldn't say there's anything particularly radical about his politics. His campaign for certain things that obviously some particularly conservatives would maybe disagree with, but what really mattered with him, I think, in terms of what he presented, was he was talking about that, the concern for minorities, which is of course a genuine one in the sense that I think anyone should be looking out for those who are in the minority, who may not necessarily get seen, recognized in the public space and in politics. But he was making the point that if really we do care about minorities and their rights, then free speech is the ultimate means by which they can actually have some purchase, some share in the public conversation, public debate, and they can be heard because of free speech. I mean, it should be a no-brainer, but it took, I guess someone like him, who's very erudite and articulate, expressing that point, just to remind a lot of people that's what if we really are genuinely serious about protecting the underdog or the minority or whoever it might be, then surely free speech for everybody is the way in which those minorities have a say. So that was something I think I particularly took away from his time here.
Oh, he's 100% correct. I mean, you've used the term a couple of times that free speech is foundational to our democracy. Without it, what's the point, but it's one of the key pillars. Nick, I'm exceptionally grateful that you've come on to chat with us. As a heads up and a warning, we'll have you back. If you'll have us back, we could love to chat more. So everyone, that was Nick Hain. He is the Education and Partnership Manager at the Free Speech Union. If you haven't checked them out online, please do so. And as with all things, and I'm sure Nick would agree, make sure you freely speak and allow others to freely speak too. So thanks for your time, Nick.
Thanks, Simon. Cheers.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.